This is Talking of Books with Isabel Abuhul and the rest of the team.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome to Talking of Books. I'm Isabel Abuhul and my co-host today is Penny McKenzie. Welcome, Penny.
Hello, everybody.
And this is our last live show before the summer. We've got a wonderful lineup of special highlights from the festival and some of the wonderful authors who attended. So you can still tune in every Saturday and pick up some of those over the time while we're all taking a short break and getting on top of our reading. But we've got some really interesting books to talk about today. So we end on a bit of a high. And our book champion, Vlad Fermazi, is going to be telling us about books by David Gemmell, the late David Gemmell, one of the most famous fantasy writers ever. And his first book in particular was the one that really got people into reading David Gemmell. I think it was made into a film. To my shame, I haven't read it yet, but I was fascinated to read about it and find out that the book, the origins of this book, started in when he was diagnosed with cancer, and it was a sort of, he used this as a sort of...
He was misdiagnosed with cancer.
He was.
And that's just, can you imagine living through something like that?
But the book, obviously the writing was his way of coping with it, and he put it to one side, and then a few years later it came out again. But... Vlad, welcome to Talking of Books.
Hi, how are you?
And tell us a little bit about yourself, where you work to start with.
Well, I work in the American University of Sharjah as an IT specialist over there. But in my spare time, I graduated with an English literature major, so I do enjoy books ever since I was a child.
Yes. And when did you first discover David Gemmell?
When I was a child here, growing up in the UAE. It was one of the first books that I found in a bookstore that I bought as a teenager with my own money.
But so that meant a lot.
Yes, it did.
Yes.
It was also one of those books that I first read that was more, that was not a young adult book like The Famous Five or The Hardy Boys when we were younger, or Goosebumps. It was more mature and more adult oriented. And as the years as I got older, I realized that it belonged to a genre called heroic fantasy, of which he is. I found David Gemmell was one of the people most famous for really making it a genre.
Yes, yes. I mean, I know his name very well.
He's written something like 30-odd books, didn't
30
he?
30 books, yes. That's correct.
And you know what he has in his favor? Now, this is an awful thing to say, but he's not going to be writing anymore because sadly he's passed away. But that means that those people who write, who like that genre, and let's face it, most of those books come in series, there isn't the agony of having a book that's been written and you have to wait for the next one.
Mm. That's correct.
So if you're going to be introduced to him now, you're safe knowing that you can read each one of any of the series that he's written through to the very end.
That's correct. Actually, his last series, which was a parallel fantasy about the Battle of Troy, he passed away right as the second book, as the middle book was being released, but the third book was still in the works. His wife at the time decided that she was going to help finish the book with whatever notes he had done. So they were actually able to finish his last series right after he passed.
That would be actually interesting,
quite
wouldn't
suddenly,
it?
Didn't he?
Yes,
he wasn't that old.
58.
Yes, yes. So I mean, it's just fascinating, and the reason why he became a writer, and he's still probably most famous for Legend, his first
That's
book.
That's correct. It's right. I have a copy of it with me right here. But strangely, it wasn't the first book that I bought from him. It took me quite a few years to actually track down that book here in the UAE. Mm. And the strange part about it is that the book, the character in the book that he wrote about, Druss, the legend, was mirroring the problems he was going through, because he thought he was going to die of cancer. So he was speaking about this legendary hero that was hitting his old age and feeling the weight of time and still having to perform as a warrior, and it mirrored his struggles performing as a writer and at the time a journalist when he was ailed with cancer, which he turned out to be misdiagnosed with.
Yes, yes. And it was a saga, wasn't it? So there were more books of the Drenai saga that continued after Legend.
That's correct. And the book Legend, actually, in the timeline, it goes on to, it's part of the very end of that saga. And the further he, as he kept writing more Drenai books, he wrote a lot of backstory to all the characters and to more and more of the past rather than what happened after the events in the book Legend.
Mm. And there's a film, isn't there?
No, there isn't.
No,
as
there
far
isn't.
As I know.
Okay. It was accepted. That was it. Century Hutchinson. There was never a film.
There was a graphic novel, but I think that there was going to be a film. I don't think it pulled through.
Do you think it would be a good film?
I don't know. It's very difficult to see books turn into good movies.
But, you know, you say that, but you think of epic sort of saga type books that have been turned
into
films.
Lord of the Rings
is a classic one. I mean, Game of Thrones, which is so very... I think there's only one country in the world that doesn't show that TV series. And I think they've translated really well.
There are a lot of books right now. The best thing about what I've seen in the recent years is that a lot of books stop becoming movies and they're trying to adapt them more for the small screen, for the TVs, and that gives for the TV shows, and that gives them a lot more time to flesh things out, because in such great epics as The Lord of the Rings, you only get 2.5, maybe 3 hours to film so much detail. It will be great to see Legend that way, but the thing is, with most of his books, they come off as action movies, because that was what David Gemmell was. He was an action buff. He loved the heroic fantasies, and that's what, and it shows in the way he writes.
And you know what? I'm not at all surprised, because he lists his influences as being people like Louis L'Amour, and Louis L'Amour is the sort of cowboy hero romantic of the sort of era that he wrote in. So it kind of it really makes sense, doesn't it, that
does.
He would then transfer that romanticism into this fantasy world of heroes. And
One of his inspirations was his late stepfather, who was an example of what it meant to be. And this is always, there was always a character that symbolized his stepfather in his books, a sort of big, powerful man who was imperfect, who had his flaws, but was always able to inspire others and do what was morally good, which is what at the end of all his books was the point that despite all the difficulties, there's always a chance for people to always do good,
which is a great message. Now we've got a quiz question for our listeners early in the show, and it has a bit of a link to David Gemmell and particularly to Legend. Is fantasy, the genre fantasy, a different genre to science fiction? So it's a simple yes or no answer. Please send your messages into 4001 and please put your name, and we will announce the winners at the end of the show.
I love all the splintering of these various genres as well. There's so many sub-genres within the various genres that exist now.
I know.
Which is just so delightful.
It used to be fiction, non-fiction.
Yeah.
And in my years of being a bookseller over the last, say, 40 years, and how more and more genres have been added, subcategories and so on and so forth. But I think that there is definitely a very strong link between science fiction and fantasy, but are they the same genre or not? Quite simply, we can't give the answer away, Vlad, yes or no, to 4001 with your names, and you will go into the lucky draw, and we'll announce the winner towards the end of the show.
Vlad, of all of the sort of series that David Gemmell wrote, do you have one that you would recommend over the others, or are there particular books within the series that stand out?
There are particular books within each of the series, but to be honest, there are two series that I prefer over the others. One is the Regante series, which is the first book that I ever bought was part of that series. It was one.
Which one was it, as a matter of interest? Because I've picked one up, and I'd be interested to know which one you picked up.
It's Ravenheart.
Okay.
Which is the third book in the Regante series.
Okay.
That was the first book.
Yeah.
So you started on the third.
Yes, that's correct.
Did that matter?
No, actually it didn't, because the a bit of a spoiler alert, but the third and fourth books were set 300 or 400 years after the period of the first and second books. So when I found the books in the order of 3, 4, 1, 2.
Ah.
Okay, well, that's worth knowing, because I picked up the first one, Sword in the Storm.
Oh, that's a beautiful
which,
book.
I'm enjoying reading it. I really am. So it doesn't really matter. Does this go for all of them? Does it matter which order you read them in? Does some of it count for some of the series?
It does count. Okay. For example, there's the Waylander series about a specific character, and that happens. It's a sub-series under the Draenei, and his particular lifetime, there's three books that goes in chronological order. There's also the White Wolf, or the Swords of the Damned series. That's actually just two books. It's part of the Draenei series, and that happens 1,000 years between each other.
I love that. I've been reading a book for quite a while now, which spans a period of time of 5,000 years.
Wow.
And I mean, we haven't even, as sort of civilized human beings, we haven't been around, writing for 5,000 years.
Yes.
So when people start writing books that span these huge, vast periods of time, it shows a huge amount of imagination, apart from anything else, just to imagine that time.
That's correct. He loves history, so he's able to flesh it out with a lot of very interesting facts, and he's able to take parallels of these historical periods and these historical cultures and include it into any of his books and into any of the worlds. That's what I loved about him as a child, because it was one of the first books that allowed me to escape and be part of that world.
I've got a little list here where people have voted which are their favorite books by David Gemmell. And from the list that I can see, his Troy series takes up space number 1, 2, and then 5, 6. So they're quite popular. Can you talk about them at all? Are you familiar with those?
Yeah, the Troy series, yes. I actually spent a lot of my youth completing the entire collection. So I read those at the very end, and they're great books. And there's people loved them because there's a lot of parallels to the people and the characters we already knew. But there was also a lot of differences, and there was more fleshed out stories compared to the characters we met in the Odyssey and the Iliad.
So in other words, what you would you suggest then, that if you because they seem to be very popular, would you suggest reading some of the other books to get a bit of background before you started on those? And I think you could possibly give us the answer to that after this short break.
Sure, not a problem.
Book Champion, for all those books you might not know about, but should.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. And we are with our book champion, Vlad Famazi, who is an absolute fan of all the books by the late David Gemmell. And we have a quiz question for our listeners. Is fantasy, because David Gemmell's books, I think we are all agreed, come in the fantasy genre, is fantasy a different genre to science fiction? Please send your answers in to 4001 and please put your name on your text, and we will select a winner towards the end of the show.
Now, just before the break, I asked you a question, which was to do with which books you would recommend people read before they read the Troy series, which seems to be like an amalgamation of some of the characters in other series. Which ones do you think would be good ones to get into leading up to the more popular ones?
Oh, I think I meant that there were a lot of characters from Homer's Iliad and Odyssey,
right,
that you'd see over here, but they were more fleshed out because of the way that, of course, Homer wrote them as an epic. These were just characters that you'd meet. Mostly you'd focus on Odysseus or Achilles, but you'd meet a lot of other characters that made up the Battle of Troy and brought forth the reason for that big cataclysmic battle. And
do you think it's possible that those books are more popular also because it was the last series that he wrote?
Yes, because by that time I think he had built a name for himself.
Yeah. Are you a fan generally of this genre, or is it specifically David Gemmell? Are there other books in the genre that stand out for you that were not written by David?
Of the heroic fantasy, yes, but the thing is, he was the first, he was my first author in that, and he brought me in. Strangely enough, one of the books that I was reading a few years later by Stan Nichols, Orcs, that author, Stan Nichols, right after David Gemmell had passed, he was a great friend of his, and he decided to, along with other writers, create this David Gemmell's Legend Awards for fantasy. So until now, there's... all the big fantasy writers keep writing and are awarded a full-sized model or replica of the giant axe that belonged to the character of the Druss the Legend from the very first book.
So that would really work for a geeky fantasy fiction author, wouldn't it?
Because I took a look at it online. It costs about £6,000.
Wow! So it's quite an impressive. Piece then.
Yes, it is.
Is it, what is it made of? Do you know? I mean, what's the story behind the actual? Because I mean, for it to cost that much, it must be pretty special.
They have a replica forged for every winner each year, and it was the first one. I think was a gift to David himself by a friend who was a blacksmith, and I think later on the rest of them were made just specifically for those winners.
That's a lovely story. It really is. Now, his wife Stella, she also writes fantasy fiction, doesn't she?
She wrote her first real book was the last book of the Troy series, and then afterwards she wrote a book herself, but I haven't read it yet.
Interestingly, the book came out in 1984. Legend, his first book, because he'd found it, a friend had read it and said, no, this has got potential, and he obviously rewrote it, and
That's
then it was accepted. But also ZX Spectrum, which was invented by Sinclair. What was his first name?
Sorry, can we go? Which
ZX Spectrum, the sort of the computers, the sort of the home computers. Someone Sinclair. I can't remember his first name.
Neither could I.
But they produced a game. That was called Legend, and with the game you would also get a copy
the game
of the book.
Correct.
I heard
it's
about
a
this once.
Game Legend.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
But that was at the beginning of the gaming things. You had what was the other thing that was around in 1984?
Mortal Kombat and all these really awful.
But it was Dungeons and Dragons. That was the other thing. And so this ZX Spectrum was at the sort of I am old enough to remember. You had to have really quite a lot of programming knowledge to even be able to use these things, but you could get these games on it.
That's correct. I actually only found out about that, I think, 2 or 3 years ago, but I was more excited not by the video game, but by the fact that someone had created a graphic novel of the same of Legends. Unfortunately, it was the only book that was ever translated or transcribed into a graphic novel.
What a shame, because the graphic novels are huge now. And can you imagine this fantastical creatures and heroes and all of that, how amazing it could look in a graphic novel?
Yes, they will. But sometimes I think back and I wonder whether it's better for them to be seen on a graphic novel, or maybe because I've had a lot of disappointment over the years when you see books that you love turn into movies and they're not what your imagination can come up with.
Do you have a particular one that really let you down?
I loved Aragorn as a book as a child.
Yes.
And then I saw the movie and I felt that it could have been better.
That's by Christopher Paolini. Yeah.
Yes.
And I didn't rate the movie at all. I would agree with you on that.
Yeah, I'm not fussy. So when it comes to movies that have been turned into, I think the only one that's ever really disappointed me, except for the first one, was The Great Gatsby. Every time I've seen that, I think the first time they did that as a film, that was just beautiful, and I could so vividly see those handkerchiefs that Daisy's throwing in the air, that just seemed perfect. And since then, I think there have been 3 or 4 subsequent
ones. Well, the last
one
was Leonardo DiCaprio.
And to me, it didn't capture the book.
I think it was a film on its own, and I loved the filming. I loved all the scenes and the sort of how they captured things from the book that were not in the original films, you know, the giant hand and New York and that time, because they could do a lot more now with the sort of, you know, the advent of so much CGI and things like that. But the book itself was an absolute masterpiece. But the one that I felt really, really let down by was Captain Corelli's Mandolin by Louis de Bernier. And he was here at our first festival. We were very lucky to have Louis de Bernier. And the amount of people who asked him about the film, and he obviously did not think the film was a brilliant... it was just... For me, it was so... The casting was so wrong. If they don't get the characters right, then you can't feel.
That's correct. I've seen quite a few movies later on, and I think people were more sensitive about that, which is why when it came to The Lord of the Rings, I think it was Peter Jackson who really took his time, and it was one of the first times I've actually seen movies that were more like the books than
yes.
not.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the covers of David Gemmell's books, you can see that they are so vivid, even just those paintings. And because of the romantic nature, you can tell me if you agree with me or not, they paint a beautiful picture in your head.
That's correct. Actually, the first book that I got, Ravenheart, there was a story that I heard because his son is active in his Facebook groups, and he had this short, small story about how in the book, in the cover of Ravenheart, his friend was panicking about having to meet the deadline for that book cover. So what he did, and he didn't tell David until years later, was that he had taken a picture of David when he was much younger and had used that for one of the characters on the front page, on the front cover. So this is so I have a book here.
We've got the book in the studio. I can tell you this book has been extremely well read. Yes.
I actually just finished reading it again last night.
Is that him?
Yeah.
That one?
No,
the other one.
He does have a very interesting look to him, though, doesn't
he?
David
does.
He looks like
him being in
almost,
a fantasy.
Doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's got those sharp, interesting features and you know, very charismatic face.
The story was that he was a very large child and he got into lots of fights. He was about 6 foot tall when he was, and he worked as a bouncer as a teenager.
Because he got expelled from school at 16.
That's correct.
Which was quite common in UK. You know, I mean, I have to say that discipline, they were so strict in those days that anyone who didn't fit in the mold, oh
that's
my goodness.
Correct. And his mother was really worried about him, so she wanted him to do better, and she knew that she had a way with words even though he's never really developed it. So without telling him, she had signed him up for an interview to a journalism company where 100 applicants were, and he felt that because he wasn't good enough for that, but and he knew that he wasn't going to get the job, so he decided, I'll be as arrogant as I can. He went in there, and they mistook that arrogant for self-confidence and hired him on the spot.
Ah, there you go. There you go. So yes, that was... and also, he obviously was not desperate. You know how you could be desperate at an interview, desperately want the job and how important it is, and he went in thinking, well, I'm not going to get the job. And so he was himself arrogant, maybe, but also full of... not concern in a way that sometimes for young people particularly, I think going through job interviews must be horrendous. Thank you, Gavin. It was Sir Clive Sinclair who invented the ZX Spectrum, and I can remember getting the first one. It was a sort of
Isabel, you play computer games?
No, but I do remember the... I don't know. I did play computer games. There was... I don't know if you've ever come across Theme Hospital and Theme... Oh, my goodness, Theme Hospital. And then this little thing that was meant to be alive living on this island, a little character. And if you didn't feed it every day and do things like this, on the thing it would die. And I had to sort of feed it because my two youngest daughters neglected it. So there was all sorts of... I mean, I didn't have that much time with computer games, but a little. On that note, we've run out of time. We're going to take a short break, but do stay tuned. We'll have more from Vlad, our book champion, today after this.
Book champion, for all those books you might not know about, but should.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. And we've been talking off air about all sorts of games. And of course, one of the most popular games, which I think has a big sort of hands, you know, thumbs up from parents, is Minecraft.
Yes, because
it's obviously a game, and it has huge a huge following. I've not actually played it, but we had a young author out a couple of years ago at the festival who'd written books for Minecrafters, and it was so popular. And it's something that I really want to give a go and to understand a little more about Minecraft.
Actually, honestly, I haven't played the game either. But I have built several gaming computers over for friends who have, and they tell me that it's a way. It's basically a way to tell stories with Lego in digital form, or blocks in this case. And there are competitions, and there are wide worlds that they can create on their own. And I think that was part of the allure of this game. It felt like, and when I tried it actually once or twice, and it felt like playing the old Atari and the old tanks game where you could build your own mazes and then press play and watch them go do the work that they need to do.
So it's a very constructive.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
You know, it's not just interactive. You actually create part of the game that you're actually taking part
and,
in.
And first of all, you had to get the resources yourself to build the structures, which is something that you don't see that often anymore.
So it is actually, it's really engaging with their creative sides. And I think it's sort of from 8+ that they can sort of get, go onto Minecraft and start to build it.
I actually know kids who are much younger who play it right now.
Yeah,
though.
Well, there you go.
It's incredible, isn't it, Jess?
And anything that is getting them creative and thinking and not just pressing a button, zoom, zoom, you know, bang, 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 must be good for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And just quickly going back to David Gemmell, from the little that I've read of the book that I'm reading, he's got quite a strong moral sort of code that runs through the books. So it's good for that.
So like Lord of the Rings, that kind of where good overcomes evil, almost?
A bit more specifics. The genre of heroic fantasy goes in line more with the character of Aragorn in Lord of the Rings, specifically because there is this moral guideline that each of the heroes believe in. For Druss and for characters that happen in the timeline before or after him, they pass down a code of how of the kind of person they believe in and the kind of man they expect to be. There was a character who once asked Druss about what makes him different from all the people who will choose to do violence or to do harm and to just pillage. And Druss explains it as there is a code that we believe in, and this code separates man from beast. And there are similar codes that appear for heroes across all his characters.
And I think that speaks very much to his upbringing, which I think was quite troubled. And even in his life, he was very supportive of people who were in unfortunate situations. He gave a lot of money to charity. He was very supportive of young writers, up-and-coming writers. So he gave back to the community a great deal. And I think that came from a hard childhood, then having found redemption, I suppose, himself with a stepfather and in the community that accepted him as a writer. So I think that's lovely that, you know, he puts that through in his writing, that you see the good wins out, that whole attitude of doing good and being right and honorable and all of that.
It's very intrinsic to all his stories, that theme of good triumphs over evil, specifically when there's a large amount of evil happening in the world or a great big battle that seems overwhelmingly impossible to win, but then how to maintain a morally acceptable or a morally correct way of doing things as opposed to just doing whatever needs to be done to get the to finish the job.
I think he sounds an amazing writer, and I think he obviously brings a lot of his own experiences to these books of fantasy. So starting with the fact that he was misdiagnosed with cancer, and this was an allegory almost of that, you know, the cancer was the evil that was and how he could fight it. But then putting that away, thinking it wasn't very good until a friend read it a few years later.
5 years, actually.
Yes. Yeah.
That's quite a while.
Yes.
That's quite a while.
And then he did rewrite it. And I think it took him 4 years till it was published. But then immediately to get this Sir Clive Sinclair's ZX Spectrum game that was packaged to protect it from as copyright was always packaged with a copy of the book, Legends. Again, that was a good marketing.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah. Yes. I thought that was very... and it was... As protection, really, that they had the book there and they couldn't sort of steal, I suppose, characters from it.
But it's a good crossover. Do you know that the same sort of people who love those kinds of games are the same kind of people that would love to read fantasy fiction? So it's actually a really good way of
marketing,
capturing an audience as well, an appropriate audience that would appreciate what the books are about.
That's correct. Another author, there's this thing called Warhammer, which originated in the UK. Well, it gained such a big following from board games and tabletop games that evolved into video games that there was a YouTube artist who decided, I'm going to do it on my own. I'm going to make a CGI movie, a 20-25 minute CGI movie on his own. And he posted, I think, a 2-minute blurb of a sample, and for some reason, one of the authors from Black Library who writes for Warhammer saw it and offered his assistance and offered his service free of charge to write the actual screenplay for this 20-30 minute movie, which until now I think hasn't been finished, because having found out about his talents, the people, video game makers actually hired him to help create video games. So he's doing this on the side with assistance from one of the actual writers of the books that he loves. Mm.
That's great. There was the Warhammer and the Dungeons and Dragons, and they did start off as they're sort of the precursor to those would be the little lead soldiers, where grown men would have these huge armies set up with all the figures, and they would move them on a
Isabel, on a physical
they
still board. Do, don't they?
They still do.
They still do that. But these are sort of, I think, where it's probably less expensive and less time consuming,
it's
maybe.
Much less expensive.
But there has always been this sort of fascination with models of different things and how
and reenactments,
reenactments. But how they used to paint those little models, they'd be perfectly, yeah.
I have a set of them at home, but I've never gotten around to painting them. And I've looked on the internet, and there are actually people offering to paint them for you for, I think, 5 to 15 pounds for each of those different characters. And this is not including the assembly of those characters, those little figurines.
You meant to paint them yourself. You can't be. So for our listeners out there, please send in your answers to a very simple question. It's a yes or no answer. Is fantasy a different genre to science fiction? It's a simple yes or no answer. Please send your messages, your answers in to 4001, and please put your name, and we will be announcing a winner towards the end of the show. It was something that I couldn't, until I researched this, I wasn't 100% sure why what would be the correct answer. You spoke about subgenres and all of that, but actually there's a very, very good definition from one of the masters of one of the genres. So that's where I've taken my answer from on that.
It's also interesting to see who reads the different genres as well, and who prefers and where the crossover is, because there's also crossovers between various genres, which are really interesting as well. Mm. Do you read other genres?
Oh, I specifically read sci-fi and fantasy. Then the different kinds of, mostly sci-fi at the moment, right?
Mm. Yeah. Not any non-fiction?
I do read a bit of non-fiction, but
because there's always that divide, isn't there, between the people who read nonfiction and the people who read fiction.
That's correct. It's just that when you're reading either sci-fi or fantasy or any fiction for that matter, they always come in series. So you never run out of books to read. Mm. So when there's a nonfiction book to read, it's very difficult to put the series down.
Oh, I think that you're clearly a fan of fiction rather than non-fiction.
But also, you mentioned early on that you discovered this when you were still a teenager, which is a crucial time to discover books that we absolutely, they sort of set the way that our reading will continue. And for you, it was the escapism that came from reading fantasy, that you could go to other places, another world. And for me, it was really because my subject also was English literature, but I was introduced to literary fiction, it was 20th century classics and then the Russian greats. And so for me, that drove where at that age, it was like this whole new world was opened for me to sort of get involved with characters. For me, it's always been character driven. For you, it was the escape. It is characters, obviously, but into a world that we can only imagine through someone else's creation. Really, we can't say, well, that's what it looks like if we sort of travel to another country, which you can do with other sorts of fiction, really.
Yeah, that's correct. Part of the escapism is, especially with David Gemmell, was that aside from having one of the characters being this old guy who needs who is your moral compass, there's always the younger one. There's always that younger child who's still finding his way in the world. And as a teenager, this resonated with me because a lot of these kids had either bad pasts, troubled childhoods, or were just got into a lot of trouble themselves. And as a kid, I did get into a bit of trouble myself. But it was also a guiding light for me as a child to follow all these adventures and to go on these adventures.
And realize you're not alone. I think that's what books do when we're children. You know, you talked earlier about the famous five, Enid Blyton and all of that. And I just thought, my goodness, how lucky the famous five were on all the adventures they went off to.
And their dog could sleep on their bed.
I know, it's all sorts of things. But actually, I was like, every time I read a famous five, I was one of them. You know, it was a famous six, actually. I was there in their shadows all the way.
But, you know, this is a problem with books, actually, because I often identify very strongly with the characters while you're reading them. And I don't know that it's always such a good thing. You know, you sort of start projecting a lot into those characters.
That is correct. You do project a lot of the characters, especially if you're very impressionable, which I was at the age of a teenager. So it was very difficult, especially when you're coming across with characters with swords and swashbuckling, and it didn't translate very well into the real world for a while.
But at least you felt you weren't alone. I think that's the other thing that when you're a teenager, that you discover, hey, actually, I'm not alone, that there are other people who, and when they're teenagers, get into, and that's why books are so important at that time, that you could see someone. And the flawed hero, I think this is something that obviously David Gemmell is an expert at, and we want those flawed heroes because every human being has a flaw. You know, there is no, you know, Mary Poppins, I'm sorry to say, much as I love Mary Poppins, she was perfectly, practically perfect, but only her. All the rest of us carry some little flaws in our makeup. And discovering characters within fiction helps you to sort of come to terms with that. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more Talking Books after this.
Book Champion, for all those books you might not know about, but should.
Welcome back to Talking of Books, and we're talking about a sci-fi book by Philip K. Dick. Now, what was the title again?
Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Okay. I was forced to read this for a Talking of Books show when we had our sci-fi absolute lovers pitched against the literary fiction lovers, we had to read, and this was one of the ones. And I'm glad I read it. But it just left me irritated and thinking about, and maybe that was a good thing because it did sort of certainly raise emotions in me. But the only science fiction book I have ever really loved was Chocky by John Wyndham.
I've actually never read
Chocky by John Wyndham.
Day of the Triffids and...
Yes, and but this was the beginning one. And it's quite, I mean, it was an absolutely brilliant book. You try and read it and let me know.
I'll give it
because it's one of those forgotten gems. And if I liked it, that says that actually lots of other people would like it too,
of course.
Who don't perhaps necessarily like science fiction. But it was a really, John Wyndham's famous for The Day of the Triffids.
I think, Isabel, maybe you also like books that are literary. The style of writing is very important.
And the characters.
Yeah, and Philip K. Dick's book, the ideas were fascinating. The style of writing, I certainly didn't enjoy the style of writing. And the characters were very staccato is the way I would describe them.
Yes, I think you're absolutely spot on. That is exactly what I didn't like. And you do have to, obviously, the point of reading is to read for pleasure and to find things that, now I'm sure I would love David Gemmell, just what I've read about him, the flawed hero, the characters are hugely important. In,
and the language is lyrical.
And the journey that they undertake. And I don't mind being in a fantasy world at all, but I need to believe that I could follow in the shadows of whoever is the flawed hero or heroine, and the fact that there are villains there, and that, again, you can sort of, you're in this world that you believe in. Joe Abercrombie, have you ever read Joe Abercrombie?
I have some of his books.
Yeah, he's been to the festival, and I absolutely loved his books that were set sort of in the past. Now, again, I loved that. I loved his books. Very, very strong characters, and this thing of the series where you see the progression, and there's another book when they grow up and things like that. So there are some of them out there, but as a sort of, maybe I lean more towards the fantasy as opposed to the heavy sci-fi.
It's always been an argument, the question that we have earlier. I don't think I'm allowed to answer it, am I?
No.
Not quite, no.
But there is always going to be spillover between the two. I think we're talking about a difference. Sometimes the genres
flow into each other. They do. Yeah.
And more and more, because when I was younger, there was always very different things. But now everybody's using one to justify the other.
Well, you could take things like Brave New World in 1984. Yeah. Now, are they science? You could almost, two of my most favorite books, are they science fiction? Well, certainly 1984, we live in 1984 or beyond. So much has been sort of predicted. And also Brave New World in a different way.
Yes, but there's also speculative fiction, which sometimes you have to want, you know, where do books lie within that?
Yes.
It gets very interesting.
One of the books that I read as a kid, which I always thought was fantasy, was Frankenstein, and then I realized he's making a cyborg or a robot. This is Frankenstein isn't Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. That was one of the very first sci-fi books written.
And I mean, now we've got these robots that actually they are producing lifelike robots. I mean, when I read about robots and what they use them for, oh my goodness, it's just terrifying. You've got robotic pets, you've got robotic people to come in, and so on and so forth.
But Isabel, even down to the micro scale where you think of nanobots and what they can do and the applications, I mean, the world is just expanding.
But they're producing
amazingly.
These robots, and you can say, I want it to look like X or Y, like famous people, and I'm just thinking, you know, how scary is that?
And answering sets of questions that you've predetermined.
Yes.
It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of life and then, would you be living? It wouldn't be fantasy. It would be,
But also, what about copyright? Could I then order a robot of a person that exists without their permission? I mean, how would that?
Apparently, that's what's happening. I mean, you can. And they're being sort of...
Well, how would you feel if somebody did that to you, that they... made a copy of you?
I don't think anyone would
ever
want
no
a copy
control.
Of me,
no, but
to be
you've
honest.
Got no control.
No,
this is where I think Isaac Asimov's three laws needs to be instated in, because everybody's always wondering about it. And it's very weird that he came up with it so long ago, and now we're coming up with artificial intelligence, it's more of a reality than it is a fiction. That you think about, maybe we need to instate this now before Terminator happens.
So which makes our question kind of complicated, really, doesn't it? We're saying we want it to be yes or no, and we're talking and we're seeing this flow that happens within.
Yeah.
Within
but it is absolutely fascinating, you know, how the world is using technology and at the frontiers of what is being invented is just. But you again, we had test tube babies, and there was a lot of. Ethical questions asked around that, and that is still continuing, you know, where for example, predetermining the gender of babies and things like that, that is ethically a very, very important question, and so on.
And there are books now where it's gone beyond the gender, where you can change it up to the point of where you want the mole on the child to go, or how many dimples do you want his smile to have, or what the color his eyes shall be. And I think one of the great things about both fantasy and science fiction is it allows you to play maybe. Let's see how this goes without having to actually go about and do it.
Exactly. I mean, it is fascinating. And reading books is a way to find out what we believe in, find out what if scenarios, and you can look at it safely in a way, really, because it's asking those questions in a safe environment. It's not in the real world.
Yeah, well, I started having an argument with someone last night because I'm reading a book called Seven Eves, which is
a great book. They say all humanity comes from seven eaves.
This isn't a non-fiction. This is a fiction in the science fiction genre, and this is the one that's projected over 5,000 years. And what becomes of humanity when the world ends and they have to go up into space? And I was really angry with the direction that the author took, and I was having these philosophical arguments about, you know, what happens to mankind. And my son was saying, calm down, it's only a book. But this is what happens, is that these types of books, fantasy, science fiction, all of these books take you to that
place.
But
then you've got scientists like Professor Stephen Hawking, whose daughter was at this year's festival with the book she'd co-written with her father, the most famous scientist in the world. And he's saying there's 100 years left, and that if we do not start populating other planets, farewell Earth as we know it. And I mean, that's, in his view, that is not science fiction or fantasy, that is reality. So 100 years from now, the planet's resources will have gone.
Yeah, temperatures on the face of the Earth, rising water. I mean, there's a lot of places that will become less
He said
less
our future lies in populating other planets. So
and that's
Mars.
Something we're already doing. Back to the thing we were talking about with robots earlier, where we need to invent smarter robots and more resilient ones to be able to do the things we can't do anywhere else, because according to what Stephen Hawking says, we might need them to do that pretty soon.
Yeah. It's just... I'm going to repeat the quiz question once more, and then we're going to have to thank you, Vlad, for being an amazing book champion today and telling us all about the books that you love by David Gemmell, who is the sort of the inventor almost of hero, I was going to say hero worship, but hero fantasy. So the question is fantasy a different genre to science fiction? Send your answers into 4001 with your name. It's yes or no. And we'll be announcing the answer and the winner towards the end of the show. Huge thanks for being on, Vlad, today, and happy reading.
Thank you so much.
We're going to go to the news, and do stay tuned. We'll be back with our young adult book, Contagion, by Terry after this.
Book Champion, for all those books you might not know about, but should.